How's it going? What is it? Friday, right? So, probably thinking about the future. It's predictable, isn't it? So that the it is to stay present to the thoughts of the future is the practice. To say that you shouldn't think about the future is the doctrinaire mind. To just think about the future, well, that's the usual, isn't it? So, what's the challenge? Is without rejection to wake up to this movement to the future, and then that's the horizontal, and the vertical is this receptivity of the way things are, simple. And of course, the complexity of the habits of the mind. We were talking about at breakfast, breaking noble silence as we do every breakfast. We do it as a practice. We're such good friends that we don't get this chance often. But we're all such good friends that I think we just have to build a monastery. We can get together and. Talk. Is that for a pitch? But we're you know, just the doctrinaire mind, which is this sort of position-taking mind. And I've often thought, why is it that Westerners, and I don't know if it's just Westerners, but why is it that we can be so very, very self-critical, so very self-judgmental, even though on a rational level, we can see that in the scale of how humanity behaves, we're pretty good. You know, we're doing all right. And yet, the mind of self-disparagement and critical can be so pervasive. It just keeps can be very, very powerful. And I think that is an aspect of the doctrinaire mind. We might think that we're very you know, we're not dogmatic. I'm not dogmatic, but I'm no good. What is that? You know, isn't it the same kind of mind, the position-taking mind? And then a reflexive mind notices self-disparagement as an object. Ah. The dogmatic mind says I shouldn't be self-disparaging. And there is suffering, I shouldn't be doing this, or I am something. There is suffering, there is self-disparagement. That's the vertical. The horizontal, I'm going to become a person who's always compassionate to myself. Dogma. And we call that ditupadana, attachment to views. Now, this was one of the powerful factors of preventing the heart from being open and peaceful. So attachment isn't just around hedonism and sensual things, but it's also around the positions the mind takes. And then when we do that with other people, you know, what blocks empathy? Say if I'm in the kind of teaching mode, which I am now, so that's my kind of conventional position, and I'm just taking a position about what you should be practicing, what Buddhism is, and so on and so forth, and then I impose it on you, then I can never really understand you. And then how can I share anything meaningful with you? Whereas empathy is a willingness not to know, to be receptive, and then trusting in one's own body of insights and coming from that, which is a whole different way of operating. And the practices of the heart are not doctrinaire. If you look at kind, amity, and gladness, they're not doctrinal positions. They're empathetic ways of relating. And so they are the beautiful balance by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one having clarity of vision, by not holding to fixed views. When I fix a view of that I am this kind of a person and I shouldn't be this way, then my heart's closed to myself. But when there is empathy to the way things are, this is that. It feels like that. And then wisdom can arise, and then application of mind can take place, and then experimenting can take place with what we call right view. Now, right view is not doctrinal view. Ajahn Sumedho uses things like, he talks about right view and righteous view. It's a good one to reflect on. How much righteous view now exists in so-called religious circles? It's disgusting, isn't it? What you see and hear. Venerable Tanisho talks about judicious and judgmental. You know, a judicious mind sees cause and effect and takes steps to move in certain ways because of that insight. Whereas the judgmental mind should be, you shouldn't be, you shouldn't be. So that's a very powerful part of our nature, I think, the use of intellect in an unskillful way. We don't have to throw out the intellect, but we needn't be a slave to it. We needn't be a slave to our doctrinal mind, doctrinaire mind. And in a very simple way of going beyond that and finding a solution to that is not through thought, it's through the heart, I think. Where you come to a place where the heart's open and that's where it is. Very simple. And the mind's the complicated. Then intellect can be the handmaiden of the heart, as it were, rather than being our being or our existence being enslaved by the tyranny of thought, the tyranny of judgment and all of that. So the heart practices are profoundly important for the intellect. You know, they're not just kind of sentimental puppy dogs and the lambs will hang out with the lion, and that, you know, it's not sentimental, it's much more powerful than that. It can go to sentimentality, but that's not its, you know, not its function. So when, as you're contemplating your own makeup and making your own experiments, try to see that position taking, I am this and I am that, and it shouldn't be this and it shouldn't be that, should. And then see, what is the mood of mind there? Is it empathy? Or is it aversion? What does that feel like? And then you're coming back to the reflective mind, It's a faculty that we're not... I mean, is the reflective faculty encouraged in education? If you have a reflective teacher, you know, if the teacher has that kind of wisdom, the teacher can offer that. Whereas much of education that I had a few reflective teachers. I had one grade 3 teacher, Mrs. Linkletter, in Annette Public School. Look at that. The old gray cells are still working. And she introduced me to Grieg, Peer Gynt. And I never forgot that. She was a magnificent teacher. Just this beautiful, beautiful piece. And it was grade 3. She had something about her that could make me reflect on the beauty of music. Very, very profound. We were talking also about, like, around right view, like the way I read things, the way I listen to things is I kind of get a feeling, but in evolving a sensibility to the spiritual path, one comes across different teachings with different beings, and then something strikes them about them. And then my take on it, so I was speaking with Stephen, who also broke an old science. there is a way of not just getting caught by language, not just getting stuck on language and saying, what's that language pointing to? Language is very powerful. So what was one case where we were doing the living study group. We had to have the study group in Ottawa. And one person was really reacting to the word defilement. Really reacting. I thought, it's just a word. What's the Buddha talking about? But this person had some very strong conditioning around the word to be mean kind of original sin, and you're an awful person. So the word just was really hard for them. And then sometimes when we read that, we read into the word our own history rather than what the word's saying. So you have to kind of try to step away from my own doctrinal position taking. And what's this person saying? What is their insight or realization? Then you come to the reflective mind, rather than just the... Because the mind, which isn't really listening, just kind of hears one bit of it and goes off on its own tangent. It says, well, if that's true, then blah, 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 blah. You know, it's no longer their discourse, it's your discourse. Right? But to actually hold in listening and take a whole piece of information and keep it reflective, that's not the political mind. That's the kind of spiritual mind that you're developing. And then, you know, there's arenas where we use the critical mind, and that's fine. Yeah? But the way of listening, the way of contemplation, the way of reflection is what we mean by wisdom. That's what panya is, I think. It's the wisdom faculty, rather than wisdom being some thing that you get at the end of a retreat and you take it home in your little wisdom box. Right? it's a dynamism of consciousness. It's something that's very light, and then the experience of being human becomes profoundly interesting. You know, even the difficulties. You say, wow, look at that. And then a spiritual practice can be engaged in all the time. Whereas if they have a doctrinal mind, the control mind, the disciplined mind, you know, all those things, then you just can't sustain it. You know, you just want to veg out, don't you? Enough of Buddhism. So that's a beautiful quality of consciousness which needs to be kind of encouraged all the time. Let's do some sitting, and then we have there's a list of individual interviews, if you would check that. And they would do half hour per person, so if you would keep an eye on your watch, I'm not good sometimes. So if I talk too much, you 30 minutes, okay? That'll help me. Okay, let's do some sitting.